And Albert, if you'd move 187-1 over. Thanks. All right. Next on this afternoon's docket, we have case number 18-60018, Garden Oaks Maintenance Organization. Let me go ahead and take appearances. Let me start with those folks. Mr. Fallick, good afternoon. You want to make an appearance, please?
Yes, Your Honor. How do I unmute? Can you hear me?
You already are.
It's nice to see you, Judge. My first go-to meeting. I'm Mike Fallick. I'm an attorney for myself and my wife, Julia.
All right. Thank you. And let's see, Mr. Lambert, do you wish to make an appearance? I'll come back there. Mr. Gabriel, do you wish to make an appearance?
Yes, Your Honor. And I'm being represented by Mr. Brendan Singh.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Stevens, do you wish to make an appearance?
Your Honor, I'm taking an additional counsel for Jacob and Melanie.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Patterson, good afternoon. Do you wish to make an appearance?
Thank you, Your Honor. Johnny Patterson on behalf of the trustee.
Thank you. Mr. Argayo, do you wish to make an appearance?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm going to be representing myself.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Bonner, do you wish to make an appearance?
Yes. I am being represented by Mr. Lambright.
Thank you. Mr. Ingram, do you wish to make an appearance?
Yes, sir. I'm being represented by Brent Singh. And Jason Lambright.
All right, thank you. Mr. Hoffer, do you wish to make an appearance?
Yes, Your Honor, Stuart Hoffer on behalf of Gordon, Chan, and Hoffer.
All right, thank you. Mr. Seaman, good afternoon. Do you wish to make an appearance?
Yes, Your Honor, I'm represented by Mr. Lambert and then maybe by myself.
All right, thank you. Mr. Ostrich, do you wish to make an appearance, sir?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm representing myself.
All right, thank you. And let's see, I've got Ms. Lane, and I don't see the rest of the name there, but I do see two people. Do either one of you or both of you wish to make an appearance?
Yes, Your Honor. Can you hear it?
Yes, very well. Thank you. And if you just tell me your name, this is so that I have a good voice print for the recording. So if anybody has to do a transcript, so if you just state your name for me.
It's Angela Lane and Nicholas Oak, and we are represented by Mr. Lambert and also ourselves.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Martinez, do you wish to make an appearance?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm represented by Mr. Lambright and potentially myself.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Singh, do you wish to make an appearance?
Yes, Your Honor. Brendan Singh on behalf of seven claimants in the OFAR case.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Williams, good afternoon. Do you wish to make an appearance?
Randy Williams, I'm the Chapter 7 trustee.
Thank you. Let me come back to Mr. Lambright. Mr. Lambright, were you able to get yourself unmuted?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I tried to use the phone in front of me. Yes, Mr. Lambright, when they asked for the process, if he's current, when it's
to Dr. Got it. Mr. Lambright, and I'm giving you the benefit of the past however long it's been, 4 or 5 months of experience. If you could get the microphone a little closer to you, it was fairly difficult to hear you. You were somewhat muffled, and I assume you're on a speakerphone, but if you could get a little closer to you, it would be much appreciated.
Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm also on the phone call. My name is Anita Kornhever. I'm represented by Mr. Lambert and myself.
Thank you. Is there anyone else on the telephone that is not on GoToMeeting that wishes to make an appearance? If you just please state your name, try to be courteous to other folks who may want to appear as well.
Yes, Your Honor.
My name is Ralph Gardner. I'd like to appear, and Mr. Lambright is also representing me.
Thank you. Good afternoon, sir. Anyone else? I believe we had a young lady. Do you want to go first?
Yes, sir. This is Lauren Smith. I'm being represented by Mr. Singh as well as Mr. Lambright.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Smith. Anyone else?
Yes, Your Honor. Nathan Pierman from Gordon and Reese on behalf of Greg Industrial in, Insulator.
You missed your hearing? Somebody please take me off the speakerphone, please. Counsel, you have your hearing on Monday at 2:30.
2:30.
Yes, sir.
All right, excellent.
I gave everybody sort of in 45-minute intervals, and since you weren't on, everybody voted, and then they gave you the time slot that no one wanted.
Well, 2:30 worked for us very well, Your Honor.
All right, I will see you on Monday.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, anyone else wish to make an appearance in the Garden Oaks case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right,
regardless of whether the upper margin would be represented by Casey Wright as well, in addition to Brett, I forgot to clarify that when I introduced myself.
All right, thank you. Anyone else?
Yes, Your Honor, Jeffrey Martin.
All right, Mr. Martin, go ahead.
I'm being represented by Mr. Lambright and Mr. Singh as well.
All right, thank you. And then I believe there was another young lady that wanted to appear.
This is Kristen Pilant. I'm represented by Bridget King and Casey Lambright. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Anyone else? Ms. Moreno, were you trying to appear as well?
Yes, I was.
All right, if you go ahead and just tell me your name, please.
So I'm Jeanette Moreno, and I'm represented by Mr. Lambright and possibly myself.
All right, thank you. Anyone else?
Judge Jones, this is Darset Patel, and I'm representing myself and my wife, Darset and Julie Patel.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patel. Anyone else?
Your Honor, this is Mark Oswald. I failed to mention earlier that I would also be represented by myself.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Mr. Patterson, you want to take just a couple of minutes and bring me up to speed with where things are?
I'll try, Your Honor. There's been a lot going on even up through today with motions to amend, amended claims, I think some motions to withdraw as counsel. I don't know that any of that really affects us today, but I would give someone an opportunity to I guess I need some clarification. Mr. Singh has filed a motion to amend, I guess, approximately 7 claims. I can't remember. And it changes the basis of their claim. And I guess I need to make sure that they're abandoning their old claim and this is their new claim, or exactly what they're trying to do to the extent it may affect today. But beyond the pleadings that have been filed, I think it's limited to a couple of motions to withdraw, the appearance of Mr. Singh, and some amended claims. We're ready to go forward, Judge.
All right, so let me... Sorry, go ahead.
I apologize, Judge. There's approximately 35 claims, I guess, that are at issue today.
All right, so let me go through first and deal with what has been filed. So we have, as I understand it, I didn't know there were 7. So let's deal with Mr. Fallick's motion to amend. Is there any objection to that request?
Do we have his proposed amended claim? He's filed a motion to amend and a supplement. But do we have a proposed final amended claim I can look at?
The amended claim, at least as I understand it, and Mr. Fallick, please do correct, is filed to the supplemental motion at 193-1. And Mr. Fallick, could you confirm that that is the proposed amended claim?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. Right. The proof of claim filed attached to the supplement is the proof of claim I proposed.
All right. So let me do this. Mr. Alonso, could you move over 184-5? Are you having trouble?
Yeah, just spinning your judge.
Do I need to reach out and grab it?
It just fell.
I'm sorry?
It just fell through. So which one did you need?
184-5.
Yes, right here. I'm putting it in trial folder.
Okay. Got it. All right, Mr. Fowlick, I've had the opportunity to review the motion to amend. I will grant the motion filed at 184, and I'll make a reference on the record that the amended claim that is referenced in the order as Exhibit 3 to the motion is not the proposed amended claim. It is the claim that is attached as 193-1. Did I get that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct.
All right. So that has been signed, and it's on its way to docketing. All right. So, Mr. Singh, let me...
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Let me go first deal with the motion to withdraw. I assume there is no opposition to the withdrawal that is filed at docket 189. It's the request filed by counsel for Irwin and Shirley Leong. All right. Howard, can you give me 189-1? Thank you. I've had the opportunity to review the motion to withdraw as counsel for Irwin and Shirley Leong. There is no opposition to the motion. I will grant it. I have signed the order, and it is off to docketing. All right, Mr. Singh, come back around to you. The only motion to amend that I was aware of was the pleading filed at 191. Is that correct?
It's correct, Your Honor. It was filed as one motion, and it was one motion looking to amend the seven proofs of claim, which is claim number 428, 122, 202, 151, 196, and 312, and what we were trying to do was listening to the last hearing. We were trying to actually the proof of claims that were filed didn't list sort of a cause of action as to something that was recognizable under Texas law. And so, in trying to work through a recognizable cause of action, I think the proof of claims that were there encompassed a unjust enrichment claim, and we were trying to clarify that some of the proof of claims just had sort of transfer fee and things of that nature. based on some of the law that Mr. Lambright, I think, is going to argue today. And so is there a clarification of what we think the proof of claims were filed on the basis that they were looking for as an unjust enrichment by an entity that may or may not have been formed correctly based on the court's order and the transfer fee that was collected as a basis of that?
All right. Mr. Patterson, does trustee have any objection to the motion to amend filed by Mr. Singh?
No, Your Honor.
All right. And I will grant that motion. Mr. Alonzo, could I have 191-1? Oh, I can get it. I have it. One. Thank you. All right, Mr. Singh, I've signed the order that was submitted at 191-1.
Thank you very much. The only other thing that I think is as a housekeeping matter, a clarification, I saw yesterday or today, the court signed the trustee from the last hearing. They signed the trustee's objection after the claims that didn't respond. I think inadvertently claim number 202 was on that list, and I just, because we're going to deal with it today, technically the court signed an order with that claim on it, but I don't think it should be on.
Fair enough. What I'd ask you to do is simply, I can't believe that could be a genuine issue, and if there was a response filed and it was inadvertently included on the default order, it should come off.
Yeah.
And that ought to be a very easy thing to check. So if you and Mr. Patterson agree about that, if you will just submit an amended order that takes 202 off, then we can move forward. And I would like that done regardless.
Yeah.
All right.
And, Your Honor, 125 was also included as well.
All right. Mr. Patterson, are you making a note?
I am, Your Honor. I have a couple of questions also, but we'll go through them, and I'm happy. If there were responses, obviously I'm going to take it off. But anyway, I'll deal with it, and if we can't come to an agreement, we'll bring it to the court.
Right. That order was intended to deal with the default. So if there was something,
correct,
if there was something on file, then it needs to come off, and we need to deal with the substance. If there wasn't a response filed, then it should be included in the default order.
Correct.
All right. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Hmm. I have a question on the list of claims for Mr. Singh, and I want to make sure I have them right. Claim 4, Claim 28, Claim 122, Claim 202, and then I'm not sure 151 or 251.
251. Sorry about that.
Okay. And then 296 and 312.
Correct.
And then there's a question about 151, whether there was a response file. I mean, I'm sorry. Which one? Sorry,
202, Manley and Lauren Smith.
Claim 202, and what's the other claim number?
125.
Okay.
What other preliminary issues do we need to talk about?
I'm not aware of any, Judge.
All right. So help me, because this is somewhat of an odd situation. Given what this entity is, and given that we are now in a seven, can either you or Mr. Williams take just a minute and explain to me what the 726 distribution looks like?
I guess I'll refer to Mr. Williams, but my understanding, Judge, is there's approximately $500,000 in the bank, maybe more.
Right.
And after the claims, the default claims order, there remains, I can tell you how many claims remain if the court's interested.
What I was really interested about, Mr. Williams, the question is this, and you know what I'm going to ask you, is once you go down through 726, are you going to pay allowed unsecureds in full, pay interest, and then have something more?
Your Honor, I have not, because the court only updated, I've not updated within the system the impact of disallowing all the defaulted claims. I can tell you in ballparking it, right now there's $582,228.71. Mr. Patterson, I think, still needs to file a final Chapter 11 claim, and then there'll be his claim in this. There'll be a tax return. But even with the remaining claims that we're litigating, there will be a significant, I would think, distribution on unsecured claims, given all the ones that have now been defaulted.
Right. But you don't anticipate a surplus in the case?
There will be a surplus if we prevail on the claim objections, I believe.
And where would that money go?
Well, what I have talked in the past to Mr. Patterson about, and have talked to other folks who have spoken to me, is whether or not at that point, because this community is essentially operating without a homeowners association, if the court agrees that with us and our argument, I think there is a homeowners association, I think at that point they need to look at whether or not it doesn't make the most sense to convert back to Chapter 11 and confirm a plan that lets them pay off the allowed claims that are out there and then go forward as an association. If not, the money would go back to the association such that it is that it was a debtor, and the board would have to figure out what to do with it. I mean, the only thing I can do if there's surplus money is pay the money back to the entity that's listed as the debtor.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Your Honor. Sorry about that. So we're prepared to go, Your Honor, and we can go one by one. I think that our exhibit list and exhibits are at docket number 194.
So I would like, just because I've got a number of people who are not accustomed to the claim objections process in bankruptcy, and they may not understand what they need to do and when. I would like for you to go one by one so that we can identify if those folks are on the phone, if they're represented, if not, that they're appearing on behalf of themselves, and so that I can pay attention to each individual person. And I know that may take longer, but I just want to do it that way.
No, and that's fine, Your Honor, and I'm prepared to do that.
Okay.
But our exhibit list is at docket number 194. And I would ask the court, as we get started, to to the extent you're not carrying the evidence from the prior hearing, to carry the trustee's initial burden to overcome the presumption on these claims to admit Trustee's Exhibit 1 through 5, which is Mr. Williams' declaration, and then the certificates and real property amendments that govern the collection of the fees for each of the sections.
Give me just a second. All right. I will deny the admission of 194-1. I will admit 194-2. I will admit 194-3. I will admit 194-4. And I will admit 194-5.
And thank you, Your Honor. And what each of 194-2 through 5 provide for is the collection of the transfer fee upon the purchase of a real property within these subdivisions. And as we go through the claims, I believe that that will overcome the presumption on each and every one of these filed claims as we go forward, because, well, and I'll address each one as we go through. And we'll start, Your Honor, with 194-12, which is the claim, which is the original claim of Mr. Ingram. The court signed an order allowing him to amend that claim today, but I don't, the only thing that changes is in paragraph 8. In his original claim, asserted a claim for real estate transfer fee collected without authority on 12-1509, and I believe the deed restrictions overcome that claim that it was paid. He doesn't say that he didn't pay anything more than what was provided in the deed restrictions, and therefore, and then his amended claim asserts an unjust enrichment, which isn't provided for if it was paid pursuant to the deed restriction.
All right. And, Mr. Patterson, just so we have a good, clean record, it is your Exhibit 12, but the under the emergency protocol, the reference should be to 194-11. And, guys, I don't want to get things confused.
It would be 194-12. So, if I uploaded the right exhibit list, Your Honor.
So 194, I'm actually looking at the document. 194-11 is the proof of claim filed by Mr. Ingram. 194.
Oh, you're right, Your Honor. My exhibit number 11 is blank, and so it got uploaded as 11. I apologize.
Right. No,
that
no.
is correct.
Oh, I just want the record to be clear. So do we have Mr. Ingram, or is Mr. Ingram represented by counsel? Mr. Ingram, there you are.
Yes, Your Honor. Brendan Singh on behalf of Mr. Ingram, and Mr. Ingram is on the phone.
All right.
On panel, sorry. And so, Your Honor, I guess as a way of trying to be efficient, as to the seven claimants that I represent, I think the facts are very much the same for all of them in terms of, I think undisputed, as to the amount that was paid and why it was paid. All of them were paid for the transfer fee. And the amount were just the amount that was that were on the fund. I guess the question that becomes, and I think, for me, looking over and again coming down late, the question I think to most, if not all, of the proof of claim that I've seen is whether the transfer documents that were admitted as exhibit 2, 3, 4, and 5, trustees exhibits, whether the fact that the state court and then the state appellate court found that those documents were not authorized. I think if the court finds that the fees can be collected by those documents that were admitted as 2, 3, 4, and 5, I think, on which that happened.
So let me ask you this. Mr. Patterson's going to argue that the appellant decision is on its face only binding as to the parties to that lawsuit. Do you have a response to that?
I think the state court went out of its way to say that. Yes, I think that is true.
Right.
The question then becomes, I don't see from that state court order, although the court did restrict it only to the chain, I don't see how, if the court found that those documents weren't done right under the property code, how could it bar an adversary to say that this doesn't, or a lawsuit saying from everyone in the neighborhood, I don't see how we then can say that those documents as 2, 3, 4, and 5 are effective where the court, although restricted it just to the chain on the judgment that they have, I don't see how those documents through the bankruptcy court could then now be valid to collect the fee that the court already found, at least in one situation, that it wasn't. And again, I think Mr. Lambright is going to fully argue that, but I think in terms of efficiency, if we have that argument, and the court finds that agrees with Mr. Patterson, one of two things, either it only applies to the chain and then those documents at 2, 3, 4, and 5 are invalid and the HOA is able to collect under those documents, or the argument of the statute of limitations on when those arguments were supposed to be brought. If the court decides on that, I think at least to most of the proof of claims, then if the court finds for Mr. Bannon and trustee in that, then I think most of the proof of claim goes away. And I don't necessarily know whether we have to go through each one, because I think the crux of all arguments, at least from my 7 guys, are those transfer fees are not valid based on the documents not being properly formed under the property code. And so just in its efficiency and practicality, it just seems to me that if that's taken up first and we make that decision, then that cleans up, I think, most, if not all, of the requests.
So let me, if I could, ask you a couple of questions. So doesn't it matter if the claimant is a current owner? In other words, if someone had paid a transfer fee and then subsequently sold their home, wouldn't that be a different analysis, perhaps, than someone who had paid the transfer fee and is a current owner?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think that does make a difference. As my 7 clients, they all paid the transfer fee and still are owners, and they bought prior to 2012.
Okay. Mr. Lembre, you want to jump in here?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that essentially where we need to look at this from is the GOMO has the ability to fully litigate the issue of the validity, first and foremost, of the creation of the association, and secondarily, whether they did too many things in their petition and whether those two separate bases led to a void transaction. And that was what the court of appeal, the trial court and the court of appeals found was void. Both void in the creation and void in their attempt to create the transfer fee. So they fully litigated this case. I understand that both the trial court and the appellate court were limited to the checks because that was all the court had in front of them. And so they could not have made an order that necessarily it affected the rights of people that were not in front of the court. However, as it relates to the association itself, the association was a party, did have the ability to fully litigate that case, and the Court of Appeals said that as those documents were presented, those two actions of the creation, number one, and the secondary, the creation of the transfer fee, were void. And void would be applicable to all of these claimants. And I agree with Mr. Singh that this argument, I think, applies to all of the remaining claimants, at least that I represent, as the overarching issue. And I don't believe it makes a difference whether they still own them or not. Void means void.
So, just perhaps a comment. You know, when the person who's making decisions is trying to help you, fighting him is probably not a good idea. Mr. Falik, you have something to add to this, since it everyone seems to agree that everyone's in the same boat.
No, Your Honor, I agree that with what's been said from a legal standpoint. I think factually each claim may be different, but I think the premise that that the HOA wasn't properly formed is the same argument for all.
And so let me, so Mr. Falik, practically go through this with me, because no one else will indulge me. So let's assume. So let's assume that you're right. Let's assume that the homeowners association wasn't properly formed. They sent a bill, and I'm shorthanding. I realize that they sent a bill. People voluntarily paid it. Now they thought they had to, but they voluntarily paid it. And the theory. And I'm trying to help everyone as much as I can, because I don't like where this sits. And I do have a certain amount of equitable discretion. The argument that this is just a void transaction is problematic for so many reasons. And isn't there anything else that comes to mind?
Sure, Your Honor. Let me preface this with the original proof of claim that my wife and I filed specifically said that it was our hope that Garden Oaks Maintenance Organization would be reorganized. And indeed, we didn't seek to recover our funds unless there was a dissolution. So it would be our hope that we have a functioning HOA that's properly capitalized. I've not deviated from that. However, if the result of this is a dissolution of Garden Oaks Maintenance Organization, I agree that Your Honor has equitable power, and under Texas law, I think there are two bases. I know others have argued unjust enrichment. I think money hadn't received is probably a better argument. That is, the money was paid under pretenses that were mistaken by all parties. And if, as Mr. Williams said, the result of this is an overcapitalized Chapter 7 where the money is going to go into a pot that then is with a questionably organized HOA, I think under money hadn't received, the appropriate result would be an equitable distribution to those of us who remain as unsecured claimants, given that I don't believe, other than administrative claims, there are any secured claims. So that would be, from a practical, legal, equitable argument standpoint, I think that's where this case sits.
Okay. Mr. Powers.
Regardless, indeed, of whether you, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, this is just hard. I understand that. I interrupted you. Please do finish.
All I was going to say, Your Honor, is regardless of the formation issues, which I think the others have argued correctly, regardless of that, as Your Honor has articulated, where this case currently sits as a 7 is problematic. And an equitable distribution to the remaining claimants with more than enough funds, as Mr. Williams said, seems like the appropriate result.
Mr. Patterson, you want to respond to that?
With the assumption of the court, jury, this case has got to move one way or the other. And I don't think it benefits a single homeowner to find that it's all void. On top of the fact that I think legally that's an incorrect conclusion, but as from a practical standpoint, it leaves one of the largest, if not the largest, neighborhood in Harris County with no HOA. And I acknowledge that there are a group of homeowners that's exactly what they believe is the proper and best outcome. I disagree with that, but as you well know, I've been wrong before. So, but I think legally and practically, the answer is that it is, these claims are gone, and everyone needs to move forward and fix the problems that are there, and get this neighborhood back kind of square one.
Right, but I mean, and you tried your absolute best to have that occur. And this is not a commentary on your efforts at all. I feel differently about the committee and their efforts, but it is my belief that you gave everything you had to try and get a result for the community that you thought was right. The community just simply disagreed with you, and that is the lovely thing about the country that we live in, is that everyone gets an opinion, and that votes matter. And so votes spoke.
Right.
And so, again, I would have done, in watching you with the benefit of hindsight, I would have done nothing different than you did. You put what you thought was right out there for everybody to vote on. People said no. Again, that's the bankruptcy way. It's the American way. And if it turns out that vote was the wrong thing to have done, everybody is vested in maximizing the value of their home and having a good neighborhood and having a safe place for their kids to play and to live, and that will work itself out. And there is certainly more than enough market power in that neighborhood to make an effect if people believe that there is a common interest to further. Let me tell you sort of what I'm going to do. And again, I find the result of this process to be something that I simply cannot accept, not given the history that we have gotten. I think, and Mr. Falik listened to me, and for those of you who don't know, when Mr. Falik and I were baby lawyers 30 years ago, we worked at the same firm. I haven't seen him in 10 or 15, but we were baby lawyers in the same firm. And he benefits from the fact that he somewhat knows how I think. And I do think that the argument that he made is the right one to advance. I think that the absolute stance of this is void, therefore, I just think people haven't thought through the implications of all of that, because I think at the end of the day that ends up hurting every single one of you that owns a home. And I simply, and as I said this during the case, I wasn't going to let anything bad that I could see coming happen to folks who live in a community. I think that there's been a terrific amount of misinformation. I think you've gotten a terrific amount of bad advice along the way. And I simply, to the extent that I have the ability in my capacity as a bankruptcy judge, I just wasn't going to let that happen to you. I'm going to accept the argument that Mr. Falik has made. I'm going to assume that all of you would adopt it because you're all smart people and you recognize that Mr. Falik is a very smart man. And I am going to overrule the trustee's objection as to Mr. Falik's claim, as well as to everyone else who is situated similarly on this call. Mr. Patterson, can you figure that out? And isn't there another subgroup that we need to deal with? Or no?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. that's within what we have before the court today or other subclasses outstanding?
No, just today. I'm sorry.
I guess I missed the step. The court is overruling our objection as to that these amounts aren't refundable, that they're not due back.
The argument that's really being advanced is that the proofs of claim don't set forth a valid claim. And I have taken the arguments that was made by Mr. Falik and which has been adopted by every other claimant on the line today that is situated the same way that Mr. Falik is, and I am overruling the trustee's objection to Mr. Falik's claim as well as to everyone else that adopted Mr. Falik's position and is on this call and is situated in the same manner as Mr. Falik is. That constitutes only the allowance of a general unsecured claim. It does not dictate any other result. It doesn't result in an elevated priority. It doesn't result in immediate obligation to refund. It simply gives the allowance of a claim. I don't think that anything else would be appropriate.
Honestly, Judge, I'm just trying to make sure I understand. I'm not questioning.
No, I understand.
I guess I'm trying to figure out what argument the court's adopting, either that this is a void organization and a void transfer, or that equitably they should get a return of their transfer fee based upon the bankruptcy and the things that have transpired, and I apologize for not following.
Yeah, neither one. It's based upon the argument advanced by Mr. Falik, which has been adopted by everyone else that is in the same position, I am finding that they have an allowed unsecured claim in the amount that they paid.
And that's fine, Your Honor. I was just trying to understand the implications because I know that, not because I'm pressing the court, because I know I'm going to get calls and have to try to explain the implication of the basis for the claims is all. And Mr. Falik argued money hadn't received, and that would require some misunderstanding, which would, I guess, go back to the validity of the HOA, which again is really what I'm trying to get at, being able to answer questions in response.
Yeah, I simply don't have to reach that far. The misunderstanding can result from a number of different places, i.e. the belief that a payment was required, i.e. a belief that benefits were going to be received. I can talk all day long about potential misunderstandings. This is a proof of claim. And you were right. Trustee was right to have filed the objection that was filed. Mr. Falik has come forth and advanced a theory which I find to be persuasive under the circumstances. Everyone else, since we scheduled this together as an omnibus hearing, everyone else has adopted that argument to the extent that they're in the same position as Mr. Falik. And I'll ask, is there anyone who does not want to adopt that position? All right. So there you go. Mr. Martinez, you don't want to adopt that position?
No, Your Honor. I guess I fully don't understand what mutual mistake means as a layperson.
I don't want
to agree or disagree to something. I'm not sure I understand, Your Honor.
Okay, fair enough. Then we'll carve Mr. Martinez out of this discussion.
No. I don't want to carve it out. I'm just saying I don't know what it is. I will think you're trying to help me, Your Honor. I will not disagree with that.
All right. Anyone else? All right. Mr. Falik, can I ask you, and you don't have to do this, but I'm going to ask you to do it anyway. Can I ask you to prepare and work with Mr. Patterson to prepare a very simple order that allows, for the reasons stated on the record pursuant to Bankruptcy Rule 7052, that allows a general unsecured claim in favor of, then you have a list of the people and the amount. And I want everyone to hear me loud and clear. This doesn't mean you get a check tomorrow. This simply means you get an allowed claim. Mr. Williams has a process that he's required to do. He does that process very well. He's done it for 30-plus years. He will follow the law to the T. But it does mean that your claim is allowed as a general unsecured claim in the amount that you paid.
I'd be happy to work with Mr. Patterson, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Could I also ask you to run that by Mr. Singh as well? He may have views about this as well.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
All right. And then if you would just shoot Mr. Alonzo a text or an email when that order has been uploaded, and we will go from there. All right. Anything else we need to do? Anything else we need to do today?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
All right. I very much appreciate everyone's participation. I so often get a blank video screen because people just don't care, or they think the process doesn't work. The process does work. There are a lot of people, including Mr. Patterson, who wants nothing more than the process to work. I promise you, he is doing nothing more than what he promised he would do for a client whose job it is to administer the process. And he could have made a lot of arguments today, and he didn't. And everyone should remember that. All right. Thank you all. Please do be safe. In the words of you, I'm going to be parental for a second. Don't do anything stupid. We're not out of this yet. Be safe, and I wish everybody well. We'll be adjourned. The folks who are on for the 3:15, if you'll